Good morning and welcome here. Greetings in Jesus' name. I feel quite out of place to be up here. We have two qualified preachers here to do this job. But you know what? I think it would be good for all of you to take your turn up here behind the pulpit. And it was good for me to study into this, and it gives, my wife said it's good to walk a mile in someone else's shoes, but this feels like it's been a 40 or 50 mile journey. So you ministers do a lot for the church and study and preach, and thank you for that, and God bless you for that. And it's so easy for me to view Sunday as a day of rest and come to church and take a lot of things for granted. So it's a good reminder of the work that others do. I was just very blessed by our songs this morning that we sang. The first one, Tyler talked about that, some things in there. To us, there was a phrase in there, it says, to us he'll condescend, God, the Creator, condescending to us. What a friend we have in Jesus. There are lots of good messages in that song. And then the last song that we sang here, all my life long I had panted, feeding on the husks around me till my strength was almost gone. Longed my soul for something better, only still to hunger on. Am I looking for answers to life's questions? Legitimate questions in the wrong places. Am I seeking fulfillment in the wrong place? And Tim, your devotions was a blessing to me. They that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. So I want to claim that promise this morning. And something Kevin shared last Sunday in his message that was a blessing to me, God wants our all. God wants our all, but Satan is fine with just the little bit that we give. Whatever we want to give, that's fine with him. He'll take all we want to give, and that's enough. But God needs our all. It was a blessing to me. I want to also thank all those of you that prayed for me this week and those that sent me messages of encouragement. That means a lot, and I need to do better at that for you preachers. And I want to talk this morning about the bitter fruit of jealousy. And I'm sharing this, I guess, out of a very real and a present need in my own life. And I'm not preaching at or to any of you. I feel this is something that I have been struggling with, and I'll just share that. It's kind of been on my mind a lot of the week to talk about this, and then yesterday afternoon, sat down to study this, and it seemed to sputter to a stop, and I looked into some other things and tried to maybe go a different direction. It seemed like I just felt a nudge to come back to this, and so we will, and then it seemed to come together a bit more, so we're going to take a look at this. Subject of jealousy and envy. They are close cousins, you could say. Envy and jealousy can sometimes be used interchangeably. There are some technical differences. Envy is a feeling of resentment and longing for something someone else possesses. It's a two-person dynamic where one person desires what another has. Jealousy, on the other hand, involves a fear of losing something or someone to a third party. It's a three-person dynamic where the focus is on protecting what one already has. And I'll probably be using the term jealousy in a bit interchangeable sense. Use both envy and jealousy. And they are, I'll just say this, they are both, in a negative sense, they are born in pride, rooted in pride, raised in selfishness, and they bear ugly fruit. And we want to look at some of that fruit today, some from the scripture. First of all, there's a story. On March 25 of 2019, there was a young man named Hakeem Odin in El Cerrito, California. He was sitting in his car at work, 25 years old, and he sees another young man talking to a lady that he was romantically interested in. Hakeem followed the young man into the building where they were going to be working, I guess. And while he was waiting for the elevator, Hakeem came up behind him and killed him. And then he fled. Hakeem was 25 years old. The other man was 19. Hakeem was caught and later sentenced to 50 years to life in prison. A crime motivated by jealousy. His sentence was in an earthly court. If he lives long enough on a 50-year sentence, he can outlive the sentence. He can be free. But it's a tragedy, a young life ruined, another young life snuffed out because of jealousy. What about me? Is there envy? Is there jealousy in my heart? And if it's not, if it is there and it's not confessed and it goes with me to judgment, the sentence for that on judgment day is much longer than 50 years. Envy is sin. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 5 and look at a few verses. Galatians 5, verse 19. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. These are the works of the flesh. It's an ugly list, a list of sins that we would not want associated with our name, with our reputation, with our character. Envyings, in verse 21, is right there with it, right with murders, drunkenness. Is this the list of qualifications we look for in a friend? As we look for a friend, do we look for these and we say, that's what I want, I'm searching for this, and this is who I want to be a friend with? Or do I measure my life by this list? Is this what we're looking for? No, of course it's not. These are the works of the flesh. This is what we are bent to become if we don't stop it. Reading on, contrasting in verse 22, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. Envy is a product of the flesh. Now, I also want to say there is a righteous form of jealousy. Tim mentioned that in his devotions this morning. God is a jealous God. God is jealous for the hearts and adoration of his people. He loves us so much. He sent his son to die for us, and he's jealous for our love and devotion. In Exodus 20, verse 5, this is in the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them, speaking of other gods, for I, the Lord, thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate me. In 2 Corinthians 11:2, Paul is talking to the church at Corinth. He says, for I am jealous over you with godly jealousy, for I have espoused you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. Paul was jealous with a godly jealousy for these people. It's an emotion born out of protection and provision, and it coming from that right heart motive, it can be a good thing. The husband and wife relationship, I thought of that. As we are jealous for each other's attention and commitment. So that has there's a righteous side to jealousy when it's motivated from the right motives, coming from the right heart. We are going to primarily look at jealousy and envy coming from a heart of selfishness and a me first attitude today. So what are some traits of envy and jealousy? We'll look at that, and then we'll look at some examples of those who were jealous. I think one of the traits of envy and jealousy is selfishness. And that's in a broad sense, but it comes from a heart of me first. I want myself to be satisfied, fulfilled, and happy. And I think one of the tests of this, to see if we have this in my heart, can I be happy when someone else succeeds? In Romans chapter 12, verse 15, it says, rejoice with them that do rejoice, and weep with them that weep. Can I do that? And I'll have to say, it is easier for me. I find it somewhat easy to weep with those that weep. I think that I find that somewhat easy to do. But I find it harder to rejoice with someone who rejoices sometimes, especially if they succeed in an area that I wish I could succeed in. Then to me, that is a sign of envy, of jealousy in my heart. Another trait would be insecurity. I am more susceptible to envy if I find my identity in people, possessions, or positions. If that is where I'm looking to for my fulfillment, I will be moved a lot more when I see someone else excelling or succeeding in front of me. If I find my security in God and in His Word, And I'll say, in healthy human relationships, I can weather the storm of life much better. Also, this thing of envy we had this verse in Sunday school this morning. Whoever I am envious of controls my mind. Have you ever noticed that? If I am jealous or envious of someone or some other person, they control me. What they do, I am reacting to that. And in a sense, I have given them control of my life, of my thought patterns, of my values, of my actions. So we, of whom a man is overcome, as of the same as he brought in bondage. Is that how it was in that verse? I don't remember exactly how that read. Another symptom of envy would be discontentment. If I am not content with my lot in life, right where I am, envy can spring from a heart that is not content or not settled. And it also brings a critical spirit. Have you ever noticed that? Someone who is envious or jealous tends to have a critical spirit towards the ones they're jealous to or envious of. If someone has something we cannot or do not have, it's easy to turn critical of that person, whether that's maybe in business or whether it's an opportunity of some kind that comes their way or a friendship. We tend to look at them critically if we are envious of them. A critical spirit. And envy and jealousy lead to bitterness. There's other things that lead to bitterness too, but this is one thing that as we are envious, it brings us to bitterness and violence. Like we heard that young man in California, it led to violence. And we'll see that in some more stories that we look at. This led to bitterness. And in Hebrews 12, verse 14, why don't we turn to that? Hebrews 12, verse 14 and 15. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Bitterness is a product of an envious, jealous heart. It's a root that can go underground and that can pop up in different places, in different ways, and look like different faces and wearing different clothes. And it's a subtle thing. And we find ourselves responding or reacting to people or circumstances or situations. And if we trace it back, it has a root of bitterness that needs to be confessed. Let's look at some examples in the Bible of those who were jealous and envious. Let's look at one of the very first ones was Satan or Lucifer in heaven. And let's read Isaiah 14. Let's turn to Isaiah 14 and look at some verses there. Verse 12. And just a couple thoughts before we read this. Lucifer was created an angel, one of God's top angels. And he was The Latin designation for his name is Morning Star or Light Bearer. That's what Lucifer means, Morning Star or Light Bearer. And a thought I came across that really blessed me in thinking of Satan in his fallen state. In the Bible talks of him as being an angel of light. Thinking of him as this morning star. You go out in the night and you see a morning star, a bright star that dominates the night sky. It's a bright star, but it quickly disappears as the sun comes up. And it's the same way in my own heart. If I have darkness in my heart, and I am basically, essentially serving self, serving the devil, that morning star, that bright star is there in my night, and I can see it. But as I open the doors, like Ernie shared 2 weeks ago, opening the doors of our heart, and we let the sun in, the Son of God, that star, even as bright as it was in the night, disappears. Satan cannot live in a heart filled with God. Let's read here in Isaiah 14, verse 12. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, Is this the man that made the earth to tremble and did shake kingdoms? Satan was envious of God. He allowed that envy and that jealousy to overcome him and caused him to respond or react in a way that he wanted to be where God was. And he wanted to lift himself up, to exalt himself above, up into God's position. And we see what happened. He was cast out of heaven. That relationship with God was destroyed, was broken because of his envy. And I don't know how, and we believe in heaven there is no sin. How did this start? How did sin enter Lucifer's heart? I don't know that. Maybe someday we will. But he had a good position, he was created in a good place with God. And he allowed envy to destroy that with him, between him and God. And it will do the same in my heart if I allow envy to take control. Let's look also at a story in Genesis 4, verses 1 to 16. This is of Cain and Abel. Genesis 4, we're going to read the first 16 verses here. And Adam knew Eve his wife, and she conceived and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. And she again bare his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. And in process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flock, and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, Why art thou wroth? And why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel his brother. And it came to pass, when they were in the field, that Cain rose up against Abel his brother, and slew him. And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground. And now art thou cursed from the earth, which hath opened her mouth to receive thy brother's blood from thy hand. When thou tillest the ground, it shall not henceforth yield unto thee her strength. A fugitive and a vagabond shalt thou be in the earth. And Cain said unto the Lord, My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid. And I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that every one that findeth me shall slay me. And the Lord said unto him, Therefore whosoever slayeth Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any finding him should kill him. And Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod on the east of Eden. Another story of envy that ended in murder. This is where envy can lead. And Cain, the older of the two, was, I believe, so they both brought an offering. Abel brought his first of the flock, a lamb of the fat of the flock. Cain brought of the fruit of the ground. And I believe both of these men knew that God wanted a sin offering that involved the shedding of blood. They knew the story of Eden, how they had fallen from perfection, how God had made coats of skin. There was shedding of blood to cover that sin. I'm sure they knew the story well. I'm sure they knew what God wanted. And Abel brought his offering in obedience to that understanding. Cain, on the other hand, decided that he was going to bring his own sacrifice. He was going to deal with his sin on his own terms. He was going to bring a gift, yes, and while it may have been a sacrifice for him, he knew it was not what God required. And it was not a blood sacrifice to cover sin. He was going to deal with his sin on his own terms, in his own way. And they both bring their sacrifice, they offer their sacrifices to God, and what do you know? God has respect to the one who obeyed. It wasn't because he was able, it was because he was serving God in obedience. Cain, he did not accept his offering. And this made Cain angry. And it stirred those feelings of envy, jealousy towards his brother. He saw his brother's sacrifice be accepted and his brother be in a right relationship with God. He wanted that, and yet he was not doing what he knew he should be to achieve that. And how is it for us? Do I understand that God is requiring confession of my sin? Bring it under the blood of Christ, and that is where we find forgiveness. Or do I try to cover my sin with my own good works, with maybe my church attendance, or extra service somewhere? Am I trying to cover, am I bringing a sacrifice to God like Cain did? A sacrifice of my own works, of dealing with my sin on my own terms? Or do I bring my sacrifice, my sin, under the blood of Christ? Accept that blood sacrifice that God has made, that atonement that is there. Cain rose up in anger and killed his brother. This is where envy took him. He talked with Abel, his brother. Came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. And then the Lord comes, kind of like he did with Adam after Adam and Eve's sin. He starts with a question, "Where is Abel, thy brother?" He said, "I know not. Am I my brother's keeper?" He was defensive. He was bitter. He was guilty. And God, in his love and mercy, dealt with Cain. He did not kill him like he could have, but he knew that Cain was a tiller of the ground. He said, "The cursed is the ground, and it's going to be harder for you to be a farmer. The ground is not going to yield its strength to you anymore. You're going to be a wanderer and a vagabond in the earth." And Cain felt like his punishment was greater than he could bear. Again, he was not broken before God. He was sorry he was caught, likely guilty for what he did, but he was not broken before God. Envy, again, another murder coming from this sin. Let's look again over at in Genesis 16. Let's turn up to that one. There's a story of Sarah with Hagar. And just for some context, we'll go back into 15 verses 4 through 6. And God is talking with Abraham. "Behold, the word of the Lord came unto him," to Abraham, "saying, This shall not be thine heir," speaking of Eliezer of Damascus, his servant. "But he said, But he that shall come forth out of thine own bowels shall be thine heir. And he brought him forth abroad and took him now toward heaven." He brought him forth abroad and said, "Look now toward heaven and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them." And he said unto him, "So shall thy seed be." And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. So God is saying, you will have a son. You will have heirs. You will have descendants. And it will not be through Eliezer, your servant. And over in chapter 16, why don't we read... some of these verses, we may skip a few here. "Now Sarai, Abraham's wife, bare him no children. And she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name was Hagar. And Sarai said unto Abram, Behold now, the Lord hath restrained me from bearing. I pray thee, go in unto my maid. It may be that I may obtain children by her. And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. And Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and gave her to her husband, Abram, to be his wife. And he went in unto Hagar, and she conceived, and when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. And Sarai became envious and jealous, and Sarai said unto Abram, My wrong be upon thee. I have given my maid into thy bosom, and when she saw that she had conceived, I was despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between me and thee. But Abram said unto Sarai, Behold, thy maid is in thy hand. Do to her as it pleaseth thee. And when Sarai dealt hardly with her, she fled from her face. And then we see as Hagar left, an angel met her and told her, didn't say, I understand your pain and your sadness, your sorrow. I'll make a space for you out here in the wilderness somewhere. He said, verse 9, return to thy mistress and submit thyself under her hands. And the angel of the Lord in verse 10 said unto her, I will multiply thy seed exceedingly, that it shall not be numbered for multitude. Went on to tell her to name the child Ishmael. And we see that Sarai took matters into her own hand. No doubt she felt somewhat responsible and bad and guilty or whatever, for she knew God had promised Abram this seed, this heir, and it was taking a long time. They were getting older. It wasn't happening. And she decided she was going to make it happen. And so she came up with this plan that backfired, caused this jealousy, this envy in their relationship. And out of that came Ishmael. He was Abraham's seed. But he was not the son of promise. And we see a couple things, but one in this, first of all, she took matters into her own hands, and it did not end well. Still hasn't ended. Most of the Arab people today are descendants of Ishmael. And those would be Abraham's seed. You have the Jews, which are also descendants of Abraham. Also Abraham's seed, obviously. And there's still conflict today. Joseph was sold to Ishmaelites, and those would have been their distant cousins at the time. But this jealousy that Sarai had towards, when she saw that Hagar, the position that put her in with Abram, it created this jealousy in her heart, and she didn't know how to deal with it. And she resorted to blaming Abraham. It's your fault, even though it was Sarai's idea. It's your fault. That critical spirit coming through. And Abram said, well, she's yours. You deal with her. And so Sarai dealt hardly with her, or harshly with her, and away she went. She ran. Hagar left. And an angel came and said, go back. And she went back. She was with them for a while longer. And then when Ishmael mocked Isaac later on, that's when she banished her. Sarai, or Abraham, one of them, told her to leave. She left with Ishmael, her son, and the Ishmaelites are still in the earth today as a result of Sarai taking this into her own hands and trying to force this to happen. Just an interesting side note, maybe, with the... Well, I'll leave that. Let's look at another one. I mentioned Joseph. There was another situation of jealousy, envy with his brothers. He had these dreams, and he just told his family what his dreams were, and they already had this envious, jealous spirit towards him. They knew he was their father's favorite son, and they hated him for it. And then he comes around with these dreams about his family bowing down to him, and they couldn't stand it. And one day when Joseph was out looking for his brothers, on his father's orders, his brothers decided, let's kill him. Again, this pattern of this envious heart, this jealousy in our heart, leads to those feelings, that bitterness, and can end in murder. Well, they decided not to kill him. They saw some salesmen over there, some people go on their, I forget what you call, merchants. And they said, you know what? I think one of the older boys, well, at first they were going to kill him. The oldest son decided, no, he didn't want to kill him. Let's just put him in a pit. He wanted to release him later. And then I guess he wasn't with the other brothers when these merchants came by and the others got to talking about it. I think it was maybe Judah decided, let's not, you know, rather than killing him, let's sell him. And so they sold him and pretended to their dad that he had died. Saul with David. You remember that? He was envious. He liked David. Saul liked David. And in the beginning, David wasn't a threat to him. He was fine. David came in. David played the harp. David made Saul's life easier. But as Saul saw David excelling and doing better than him, those seeds of bitterness, envy, jealousy started to grow, turned into a fierce attitude in his heart that he tried to kill David several different times, twice with a spear, several times sending him out to the Philistines, outnumbered. He knew it. His goal was to have David killed, and it didn't happen. And the women were singing, David has killed his, or Saul has killed his thousands, and David his 10,000s. And that just drove Saul berserk. He wanted that glory for himself. And you can see that the consuming, where it says there in our Sunday school lesson this morning, of whom a man is overcome is the same of the same as he brought in bondage, something like that. Saul was that man. He was consumed with destroying David, that it just consumed his life. He was overcome by that. It consumed his life, and he spent all kinds of time chasing David through the wilderness, hunting him down, trying to kill him, and it didn't work. And it was motivated by this jealousy, this envy. And then I want to look at Matthew in chapter 27. Let's turn over to that. This is Jesus, Matthew 27, verse 17-23. Matthew 27, verse 17. Therefore, when they were gathered together, Pilate said unto them, whom will ye that I release unto you, Barabbas or Jesus, which is called Christ? For he knew that for envy they had delivered him. Pilate knew that. When he was set down on the judgment seat, his wife sent unto him, saying, have thou nothing to do with that just man, for I have suffered many things this day in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitudes that they should ask Barabbas and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said unto them, whether of the twain will ye that I release unto you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate saith unto them, what shall I do then with Jesus, which is called Christ? They say unto him, let him be crucified. Pilate knew that this man before him was a righteous man. He knew that it was not for sin that he had come to judgment. He knew it was because of envy on the part of the Pharisees that they had brought him here. His wife sends a message, don't have anything to do with that just man. I have suffered many things this night in a dream because of him. And Pilate asked the people, what shall I do with you? I have Barabbas and I have Jesus. Which one should I give you? They said, Barabbas. Set Barabbas free. What shall I do with Jesus? Crucify him. Envy drove them to murder. Now, we may not go out and murder somebody, We may have this envy in our heart, and we're not necessarily going to go out and kill somebody over it. But what does the Bible say? If you love not your brother, you're a murderer. Can envy cut off the flow of love? Sure it can. What are some steps to overcoming jealousy and envy? These are not, I didn't think all these up myself. I had a little help, but did a little research. I think the first one is prayer. First of all, recognizing we have a problem. Praying and committing the temptation, the struggle, the problem to God. Recognize it as sin, commit it to God. Put it under the blood. Don't bring our own sacrifice like Cain did. Don't try to overcome this on our own strength, and just simply do more good works to overcome this. It will not work. God will not be satisfied with that type of sacrifice, that provision for sin. Galatians 5:16 says, "This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh." Remember that list we started with, all the deeds of the flesh? That was in Galatians 5, just a little after 16. Here it's saying, if we walk in the Spirit, we will not fulfill those lusts of the flesh. Another step would be to develop a heart of gratitude. Another one would be to find our security in God. Another would be to spend time with God. Essentially, making God the focus of our life, finding our security in God and not in ourselves, not pursuing, not trying to fill that need by pursuing a fulfillment to that need in the wrong places. Like the song, "Feeding on the husks around me." We're searching for answers in the wrong place. We don't go looking in the pig pen for our Sunday lunch. We don't go down to the barn and open the grain barrel and eat out of that. Why do we do it in our heart? We look for fulfillment for some of these things in our heart in the wrong place. And it brings problems, brings envy and jealousy that leads to murder, hating our brother or sister, whatever the situation is. I want to close with some verses in James. Let's turn to James chapter 3. James has a bit to say about this. James 3 verse 14. Through 16. "But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth." In other words, recognize it for what it is. Don't try to tell yourself it's something else. "This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work." This envy can bring bitterness that has that root that goes down underground and can pop up and can cause problems and can create every evil work. Let's look at, turn over into James 4, verse 4. "Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Do ye think that the Scripture saith in vain, the Spirit that dwelleth in us lusteth to envy? But he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Open our heart Open those doors in our heart. Let the sun in. As the sun comes in, that star, that the devil quickly vanishes. He leaves. He can't stay there. This is how we get the devil out of our life. Submit ourselves to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh to you. Cleanse your hands, ye sinners, and purify your hearts, ye double-minded. Be afflicted, and mourn, and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning, and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. I believe envy and jealousy at its core is trying on my own strength to, in a sense, lift myself up. It's rooted in pride, lifting myself up. We should humble ourselves, like the last verse says, humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. Let's stand for prayer.